Introduction. The Dance of Creation. In his portrait from the mid-1980s, entitled Dame Iris Murdoch, Tom Phillips painted the novelist looking out to her right toward the light that falls on her strong, pale face, high Mongol-looking cheekbones, and unsmiling mouth. Murdoch's hair, as always roughly chopped, looks unattended to. Her collar is awry. One wrinkle in its cloth, a subtle touch, resembles a tendon in the neck. Her expression is at once mournful and calm. A profound alertness and unflinching quality is created by the almost sweet set of the mouth and the indirect gaze, so unlike the many photographs in which she relentlessly glares out at us. The 1981 portrait by Snowden, for example, a photo that relishes also the rumpled bulk of the body in a poorly buttoned coat. But the size and disarray of self are not the focus of the image painted by Phillips. The light draws the sitter's gaze, falling on the broad planes of her face and on a corner of the painting on the wall behind her. This is the horrifying and majestic late painting by Titian of The Flaying of Marsyas. The light in this painting also comes from the upper left. A further mysterious link is that Murdoch's head obscures the head of Marsyas. In Titian's painting, the satyr Marsyas is hung upside down, his goatish legs lashed to a tree's branches, as if in a long, tense stride. Bound at the wrists, his arms rest bent on the ground, framing his head. Near this suffering, shadowy head, the eyes open and luminous, but the mouth rucked down to the chin, as in the mask of tragedy. An ugly lapdog is licking up blood fallen from the long torso. The god Apollo, whom we also see down to the left in Phillips's painting, is wielding the knife that has just begun to flay the skin from the living Marsyas's body. Titian's radiant blonde Apollo is kneeling and intent. Robert Hughes calls him prim, but perhaps it is more accurate to say that Apollo is completely absorbed, for it is his task to extract the true soul, however painfully, out of the husk of even a very beautiful body. As he does so, in fact, he must aim to make the materially beautiful seem like a husk. Rather than being primarily an allegory of the mortal artist punished for hubris by a divine one, Marsyas was tricked into admitting he believed his reed flute might rival Apollo's lyre. Marsyas represents for Murdoch, as he clearly did for Titian, the pain of yearning endured and terror faced in the ordeal of creation. The artist is being remade with a new kind of beauty as we watch the painting, and a new definition of heroism is born out of this unbearable unselving. Murdoch's Bradley Pearson, the narrator and protagonist of The Black Prince, 1973, explains how this unselving works in the artwork he is most drawn by. Hamlet is words, and so is Hamlet. He is the tormented, empty, sinful consciousness of man seared by the bright light of art, the god's flayed victim dancing the dance of creation. The late Elizabeth Dipple, a Renaissance scholar attracted to Murdoch because of the novelist's Shakespearean variety and seriousness, has properly identified the source of the dance. "That Shakespeare is Marsyas," writes Dipple, "flayed, suffering, defeated, dead to the self, drawn out of himself as his skin flaps to the wind, is Murdoch's image of the genuine artist." The identification between Marsyas and the artist is made in Tom Phillips's painting by the placement of Murdoch's face over the suffering satyr's.